This podcast is from Allegro Non Troppo on Joy Melbourne 94.9 radio station, Melbourne, Australia, and is produced for you by Adam, Peter and Robert. You're listening to Allegro Non Troppo across Australia and the Community Radio Network. Corey Earlham, spokesperson for the Australian Coalition for Equality, was one of the key people who lobbied politicians around the country for law reform for same-sex attracted people.
This has come to fruition, and there are a raft of law reforms that acknowledge equal rights. All through the process, the community strongly supported these changes. Now that they've gone through, it appears that some people getting welfare payments may lose part of their income. Equal means equal, and people in same-sex relationships will be assessed now under exactly the same criteria as people in heterosexual relationships.
Whilst the Australian Coalition for Equality has been saying this might be the case all along, it's only after the deals have been done that this issue has come to the foreground.
There are a lot of complex issues here. Ironically, one of them is that people who lived under the discrimination and persecution for most of their lives, who are now enjoying hard-fought freedoms to live their lives as who they are now on the receiving end of the downside of these reforms.
Having lobbied and worked so hard for our equality in federal law, Corey was regarded as one of the heroes of this cause and still is, but the changes to Social Security have brought out a more bitter sentiment, and now Corey Earlham is one of the people being finger-pointed.
After all the years of voluntary hard work, how does this feel? How does he feel about this?
And we're soon going to find out. Corey Earlham, welcome to Allegro and the Community Radio Network.
Thank you for having me on board.
It's a pleasure, and I've been looking forward to this for some time. You're one of my little heroes. I've got this little raft of heroes of people who do stuff. Do you get this all the time?
Oh, look, there's always fans and people who aren't so much fans. So thanks, Adam, for having me as one of your fans.
Okay. Corey, just quickly, describe in your own words who you are and what you're doing for the Australian Coalition for Equality.
Sure. I'm a young guy. I'm only 27. I volunteer my time with the Australian Coalition for Equality lobbying federal government. That means that I spend a lot of time talking to a lot of people about the issues that face our community. Mm-hmm. And then I go to Canberra and I present those issues to politicians and see if we can't find a way to get better outcomes for our community.
Why? Why do you do this?
My family's always been very socially aware and very community involved. I've grown up in a family where most of my weekends were spent doing some form of volunteerism, mm-hmm. Whether it be with Scouts or various other organisations. So I guess I see it as my way of giving back to the community. It's a talent that I have naturally to be able to talk to people. It's a talent that I have naturally to be tenacious and speak to power, as some people like to put it, in a very confident way. So I think this is one way that I can use my natural talents for the betterment, not only for myself as a gay man, but also for the benefit of the community.
There's a couple of things in myself why I think I recognise in you. You're pretty unflappable, aren't you?
Oh, look, I get flapped every now and again, but not too often.
I'm usually fairly unflappable. When I do flap, I really flap big time. You know what the big... If I contradict myself, I lose it completely. And I've done that a few times. But apart from that, I'm fairly unflappable. And during the stuff that you do, you need to be fairly unflappable. How did you get to this position? Tell us a little bit about who you are, where you came from.
Look, I'm originally a Sydney boy. I grew up in a town called Campbelltown in New South Wales.
My condolences.
Thank you. For those people around the country, that's similar to Frankston here in Melbourne. Yeah. It's the furthest town out in the southwest.
I grew up in Weeper in far north Queensland, so I completely identify what it's like being on the outer. Although a satellite town like Campbelltown, at least you could escape to Sydney.
Absolutely. I was regularly going in on the train for an hour to spend some time with friends in Oxford Street and Newtown and Stanmore. It was quite fun. So I grew up there. I left Sydney when I was 19 and moved to Melbourne, and I have to say it was the best decision I ever made.
Why did you leave?
Look, there was a couple of reasons. I wanted to stand on my own two feet. My family's very close-knit. They all live within 5 kilometres of each other.
Okay.
And Melbourne, they knew no one.
And why was it the best move you made?
I love Melbourne. I love the culture. I love the fact that Melbourne has so many different things for you to do. We have a very close-knit community down here, I think, compared to some places.
The gay and lesbian community and the allied communities here are fantastic. And Sydney is a scum-sucking filth hole that runs on drugs and sex.
I don't think that it's a scum-sucking filth hole, but I do think that there's not as much unity as there is here in Melbourne. I think that we've got some fantastic services down here.
Pick the diplomat here.
Look, I moved to Melbourne and fairly soon after coming to Melbourne, I think it was about 18 months, I started working for the gay and lesbian switchboard down here. I helped them get funding from federal government and set their processes up, and that was just a short contract. And I really loved the fact that there was so much support from the government down here, but it was the BRACS government at the time, to be able to help our community. And there was a genuine want to be able to give this money because they saw the value in preventing youth suicide through something like the counselling service.
Okay. That's quite interesting. If you'd been here a few years beforehand when we had the Kennett government, I wonder if your experiences and outcomes might have been somewhat different.
I hear it could have been.
Yes, it may well have been. Where were you educated? What sort of education did you have?
Look,
answer this very carefully because I will now judge you on the answer to this question.
Look, I'll take you on any time on this, Adam.
Good-o.
I am a high school graduate, proud and true. I received high distinctions in a pathways course to do law at university.
Public or private school?
Public school.
Oh.
And when I did that pathways in year 12 and got the high distinction, I decided in my infinite childish wisdom that I couldn't defend a criminal and therefore I couldn't go to university and become a lawyer, so I'm going to go out to the workforce. And I worked for a little mail house and started my career in marketing, which is my sort of day job, and I loved it. Loved it, and I loved earning money, and I loved actually getting my teeth into things and getting things done and taking no theoretical, just doing practical. So I never finished off uni.
Oh, really? Are you going to?
Yeah, I am actually. I'm enrolled to finish off some things there.
The one thing I know about you is you're very tenacious and you're a very clear thinker. So if you can get those qualifications from university, that will open up. But you need to do probably a double degree and at least a master's. That'll open up all of these doors for you. Corey Earlham,
I'm a firm believer that it's not about the degrees that you have. It's about the experience that you have. But when you hit about 35, you can't earn more money unless you've got a degree.
Let me tell you something, Coriel, and from my experience is this. It doesn't matter. The experience, yes. The experience will get... But if you don't have the letters after your name, people generally will not believe you.
Well, I used to be a JP in Sydney. Got that at 18 and 2 days. Was something I really wanted to do, so I believe that the JP was enough of a name afterwards.
I've got strings and strings of letters after my names, and people say, oh my God, you must know it all. And I say, yeah, I do.
Yeah, but you're unflappable, and that's part of the problem. People like a little bit of flap every now and again.
But having the qualifications doesn't necessarily make me a better person at what I do, but it gives other people confidence that I do know what I do, and that's probably where it's going to be important for you. God, I wanted this to turn into careers advice, but I just admire you so much.
Thank you.
So when you moved to Melbourne, and what did you do here? You did marketing and promotion?
Yeah, I did event management for a little while at William Angelis. I was on the William Angelis Institute Council representing students. I've had a long history in student activism during high school, so of course that continued into TAFE.
Was this sexuality based?
No. Look, some would say that it was me making sure that I had my own turf in Campbelltown that I could domain and be in charge of. Others would say that it's, again, comes back to that sense of giving out to the community. I just say I had fun. I enjoyed it. We got to run the school Pepsi machine, and that brought in lots of money. It meant when you're the secretary, you get to say where that money goes.
Oh, my goodness. You enterprising young thing. Correct. Sometimes I can't believe you're only 27. Now, let's do a little bit of a leapfrog forward here. How did you get involved in the Australian Coalition for Equality? There would have been lead-up process. You were involved with the Gay Counselling Service.
Yep, so then I took a break from the community and sort of just became a punter for a little while because I needed to get my career kick-started here in Melbourne. And when I came back, I was looking at various community groups to see where I could fit in and where I could give something back. And I initially joined the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby and spent 12 months there. And then I realised that the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby did such a wonderful job that there was not much left to do. Because they were already getting everything done at the state level. So I recognised that I wanted to do federal stuff because it was new and it was meaty and we needed to start from scratch at that point back in 2007. And so I approached the Australian Coalition for Equality, which is the only national LGBT organisation solely for national things. And so they accepted me and here I am 18 months later, talking to you, reforms are in and we're about to implement on 1 July.
We'll talk about the reforms in a moment. I just wanted to follow this development and how you got up to Canberra. So the Australian Coalition for Equality is a volunteer organisation.
100%.
Okay. But for you to be up there in Canberra doing all this work, is there a team of people?
Yeah, look, we have a committee of probably about 8 people, and I am the junior of those people. These people have been in the trenches for years. They have gone through state law reform. Rodney Croom, who's one of our committee members, has gone through the United Nations to get decriminalisation in Tasmania. These are the people that I turn to and go, hey, blah, blah, blah is happening, what do you think? So I'm very lucky that, unlike a lot of organisations where sometimes you're left out by yourself because there's not a lot of support, I've got a fantastic team of people that work with me and I'm nothing more than the spokesperson because it's their wonderful ideas to make these happen.
And their diversity of experience and knowledge seems to be really extensive.
Because
the approaches that you've taken to the federal law reform have been multi-platform across all parties, but they've been extremely thorough. So it does point out to me that there's a great deal of knowledge and experience has gone into this process.
And I just have to take time to thank the academics who helped out as well. People like Miranda, who is a specialist in tax and superannuation, their willingness for me to jump on the phone and say, I've got a technical question, could you explain this to me? And they've just been giving with their time to provide their specialist knowledge to both A, educate me, and B, when necessary, attend Senate inquiries and perform in front of some pretty tenacious people asking some pretty difficult questions.
Did you always have the answers?
We always had an answer. It may not have been the answer that they wanted, and it may not have been as detailed as they wanted, but we were always broadly prepared. And we pretty much knew what sort of things were going to happen. Again, the years of experience, those people always sort of guided us in the right path.
So you had a fair idea of what was coming and how to answer them. And politicians can be quite squirmy when it comes to these things, but they can also be really tenacious and interrogate on what sometimes may seem the most irrelevant of issues if they don't know what they're talking about. My dad was a politician. He told me a few of his techniques.
Why aren't you a politician, Adam?
Because I have ambulatory political views. It changes. My political views change a little bit.
I reckon there's a local council seat somewhere for an independent.
Not interested. Don't want local. Don't want state either.
Okay.
Oh, state I wouldn't mind. But I don't think that I have the education that's particularly necessary for a politician. I work on a few boards and of committees of management for sector organisations in broadcasting, and I take it far too seriously.
You sound like my other half who wants to be a senator's wife.
Corey, I could see you being a senator. That's what I would love. If
one
I was to
day.
Go into politics, I would want to be a senator. I don't want to have to go through the election process particularly, but I would, and I don't want to be debating in the lower house because it's so feral at times.
Do you know, it's funny, I spend a number of days in Canberra and I'm there from 8 a.m. till 8 p.m, sometimes later, and we'll all see question time and there's everybody in the chamber and it's feral and there's smart-ass comments and Julia Gillard's calling Christopher Pine a poodle.
Isn't that shocking?
Look, in one way, it's funny when you look at it in context because it was a boring question time. When you take it as a silo comment out of context, it's offensive. And for somebody who was called barren only 18 months later and had a nose out of joint by having it happen, she should have known better.
Yes,
Yeah, I often think that Question Time brings out the performer in politicians. I wonder how much of it's performance and how much of it's
genuine. I can answer that.
Debate.
My father was a politician. He used to get into the most vitriolic and vicious debates and name-calling things during Question Time with some of the opposition. But on the weekend, they'd be over at our place. They'd be friends. They perform.
Exactly where I was going with this. And outside of Question Time, there's maybe six people in the chamber debating a particular bill. Other people are doing meetings. They're in committee rooms. It's a completely different reality behind that Question Time veil.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, Australia's got a pretty good democracy.
Yes, we have. They do put on this performance to entertain the people who are watching on TV as well. I mean, Question Time is particularly dull, but we do have some very good performing
politicians. But they're very sensitive, aren't they? Because with regard to the televising of this Question Time, they're very specific about where the cameras are allowed to go and
The cameras are actually fixed positions, so everybody knows where they're going to sort of look at. Yeah, you sort of know when to smile, and it's nothing worse than seeing an MP on Question Time having just got back from an overseas junket falling asleep at the bench.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, we're a bit off topic, but I actually quite love this topic. It's interesting.
So do I.
Yeah, I like Paul Keating was just one of my favourites to watch during Question Time.
Only for his entertainment value. Good.
It's funny you say that. Paul Keating's father was a train driver. My father was a train driver.
Oh, really? God.
Not that this is representative of who I am. Mark Latham's seat was my local seat, so it's quite an interest back in Sydney. I keep on getting told I've got good breeding.
Now you better tell me if this is an appropriate question or not. Are you a member of a political party?
No, I'm not. I started out at a very young age working for the Australian Electoral Commission, and a rule of working for the Australian Electoral Commission at elections is that you can't be a member of a party. So I have yet to join and have nothing directly on the horizon to join a party.
Do you have a particular party that you would support? I vacillate.
Look, I think that it's important that as a community representative that you're not a member of a party per se. Mm-hmm. It's not saying that you can't be a member of a party and represent the community, but I think from my perspective, I get a lot more open doors because I'm able to work with people on their issues in their ways.
I think I'm a bit like that. I have philosophical leanings towards parties. There are elements of most of them. If I had to pick a party that I thought that I could probably work with the best, unfortunately they don't realistically exist anymore, would be the Democrats. I think they sort of have quite a few things that I could identify and thought I could work with, but I couldn't see myself being a staunch Labor, Liberal, Green person, unfortunately.
It's so funny. People say to me, if the Liberal Party was Malcolm Turnbull's Liberal Party, would you join? And I go, well, I'm so far in the centre when it comes to culminating a whole bunch of views that I probably would join a Malcolm Turnbull Liberal Party if the ALP was too far to the left. And while it's not, then there's the ALP. And when you start looking at the way that the Greens are maturing, because the Greens are filling that void for the Democrats, that there's really not a lot of differences when you look at a broad range of issues across the parties.
Yeah. And even, look, as we were saying before about politicians being best mates and yet slagging off at each other all the time, I mean, this all comes down in context as well. They might have philosophical differences, but there's quite a lot of respect. My dad was really good friends, but bitter enemies with Joe Bjelke-Petersen.
Oh, we love Joe.
Good. Would you join a coalition if it was led by Joe Bjelke-Petersen?
Not on your life.
I could tell you some interesting stories, because the face that people put on quite often is the one that people expect to see, when in reality it's nothing like that. Our special guest on Allegro today is Corey Earlham. Corey, we want to talk a little bit now about the law reform and about how it's going to affect our community. It's been huge. How many pieces of legislation are being reformed in the federal?
84 have happened, and the 85th is the piece of legislation for that's replacing work choices, which gives same-sex couples equal rights and parenting leave and things like that. So it'll be 85 in total when it happens.
A lot of this legislation is very complicated. Can you give us a bit of a one-sentence what it means, across the board for people around Australia. Remember, we have a lot of people listening across Australia, and we'd like to just have a little bit of a one sentence wrap up of what these new federal law reforms will mean.
What happened in 2008 is that the federal government treated same-sex de facto couples exactly the same as they currently and previously had treated heterosexual de facto couples. So if you had the right to be recognised under the pharmaceutical benefit scheme as your heterosexual de facto partner was your partner, then your homosexual de facto partner would be treated exactly the same. And there's 85 areas where, 85 laws and a range of areas where same-sex couples up until 2008 were not being treated the same, and now they are. And that's basically a principle of equality that the government introduced.
Let's look at the satellite and focal areas where this seems to mainly have occurred. Taxation.
Taxation, yep.
Superannuation.
Yep.
Social Security.
Yep.
Any others?
Medicare.
Medicare. Does that come under Social Security?
No, it's kind of a little bit different.
Okay.
Kind of halfway between tax and Social Security.
Private enterprise now has to take on a lot of the same sort of stuff.
Look, private enterprise will take it on because it's now the societal norm and it's societally expected that you will. And a number of progressive organisations already had previously, such as Telstra was recognising overseas marriages. There's other areas like immigration. So now you can have your partner come in under a de facto partner immigration visa rather than through the awful interdependency.
Yes, I went through that.
It's not nice. And it's more expensive. Like, the thing that people don't realise is not only were gay people discriminated against, but where they did get the breaks, they had to turn around and pay more money for it. It costs more here in Victoria to go through a relationship register process than it does to go through a marriage. You know, it's equal, but there's still that financial aspect. And I suppose it's because we're paying with smaller numbers.
Corey Earlham, all of this work you did up in Canberra, you've done it voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And you have spent a lot of time up there. Were you the main sort of, like in everybody's, all the politicians' face, was it mainly you?
No, there was also the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, and I have to seriously take my hat off to the New South Wales Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby for the fantastic background work they did on families, particularly families. They strategically worked with everybody to make sure that we got them into an outcome. Because if people are aware, originally the update to the Family Law Act was not part of the original reforms. And ACE and a number of other people worked with the Senate committee to get them to recommend that it should be part of it. And then that came through a little bit after that. And look, it probably was just that they were waiting a little bit to see how things sussed out. But New South Wales were fantastic in family law. I walk through Canberra now, people know my name, they know my face. And that's probably a good thing. I would never say that I was the only or the most prominent, but I was definitely there one of the most regular amounts of time.
Corey Earlham, this is a full-time job you were doing up there, isn't it?
I was 12, very 14 lucky.
Hour days.
I was very lucky to have a company that I previously worked for that were accommodating to my ability to take some leave here and there to do that. Since was made redundant from that job. So anybody wants to employ a good marketer or anybody wants to pay me to lobby at the moment, I'd love them to come and give me some money to do so.
It must have been, but it was a terribly expensive process for you to be up in Canberra all the time doing this.
I was happy to donate the $10,000 I spent in the last 18 months to get this done because two reasons. One, I reckon $10,000 was a pretty small investment to make for the amount of money that I'd win back afterwards.
Now, what's happened is these law reforms have come out and everybody was singing your praises. This is just so fantastic. Now we're regarded as equals under all areas of the law. But then, late last year, a section of the community to do with Social Security suddenly realised and it became aware that they call it the devil in the detail came out a little bit. And they suddenly realised that some people are actually losing money on their Social Security because they're going to be treated as equal. And when everybody was singing the praises of the Australian Coalition for Equality and indeed you, suddenly there was a bit of a turnaround from a section of the community. Tell us a little bit about that.
Look, all throughout the Senate inquiries, the Australian Coalition for Equality asked for a longer implementation for Social Security, for them to raise awareness for the fact that there were winners and losers, and the Attorney General from day one on the 30th of April 2008, when he announced these reforms, said there would be winners and losers. The community picked up on it in the Senate inquiries a little bit. There was a lady by the name of Dr. Jo Harrison who performed or appeared before the Senate inquiry and raised some of these issues. But the broader community, until it was actually Eden, people realised was in, didn't quite cotton on to what it meant. And what it meant was that we were going to be treated equally and we were going to be treated like all the other heterosexual couples. And that meant that people were going to have to declare their relationship. They were going to potentially be outed by doing so. Old age pensioners were originally going to have two names on their card. This was something that they weren't aware of. They were going to lose a little bit of money. So we had said to the government, and I went out to Geelong. Sorry, I went out to Geelong to the Community Cabinet in December, and I got to ask the first question in a public forum, and it was basically, Mr. Rudd, what are you going to do to protect the older gay and lesbian people that are affected by these reforms? Are you going to consider putting education and advocacy money into our community so that we can help our community adapt to these reforms? Didn't get many places with that, unfortunately. So come January, there was this organisation called the Coalition of Activist Lesbians, and I love activist lesbians, they're okay. Great. They started really ramping up within the community at a grassroots level the impact of these reforms, and that led to a number of organisations in Sydney creating a position paper, of which ACE is a signatory, that calls for the government to grandfather people on these reforms. And that's currently the round that we're talking about down in Canberra.
What's the likely outcome?
I don't think that there's a clear likely outcome at this point.
Allegro Non Troppo is produced at radio station 3JOY and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
This is Allegro Non Troppo with Adam and Peter. Our special guest is Corey Earlham from the Australian Coalition for Equality. We've been talking about the changes to the federal laws and the 84 pieces of legislation, and number 85 is about to be changed, and the impact this has had on the gay and lesbian community. There's particularly this, a lot of the negative stuff we're hearing centres around Centrelink, Corey.
Look, of course it does. It's the most visible negative impact in people's hip pockets. So somebody who is legitimately barely surviving, receiving the current level of Social Security payment that they're on now, as a single person and have created their life based on that, to now then have to adjust that finances for the broader amount of people in the community, that's terrifying.
Mm.
That they need to financially find another $100 a week to survive on their current standard of living.
Yeah.
For those who are perhaps a little bit more vulnerable than most, those who are older, those who are on disability support pensions, particularly those over 55, this isn't an easy adjustment to make. For the really, really old people who are over 70 in our community, who in the 50s were thrown in jail because it was illegal for them to be gay, in the 60s they had electroshock therapy in a mental institution because it was a mental disorder to be gay, they've systematically kept their relationship in the closet.
Mm.
To now have to out themselves to Centrelink, there's a number of relationships that are A, breaking up, B, are traumatised at the thought. If you can imagine having been locked in jail and...
I understand perfectly. I came out in the 70s in Queensland. I understand perfectly what they're going through. I feel as though I come from a generation that was persecuted, criminalised, bullied, beaten, brutalised, and now we're getting this equality, but are going to understand people who've gone through that. Then we've had this springtime of being accepted and being able to live our lives, and now we see people in that particular generation are now having a new set of laws brought down on them, which is impacting negatively on them, and they're quite distressed. There's a lot of people in the community are quite distressed. This equality comes at a price.
It does, Adam, but even your generation hasn't suffered what we're talking about here. You weren't thrown in jail necessarily days for just being gay. You weren't necessarily put in a mental institution and given electroshock therapy to try and cure your homosexuality. We're talking about the really, really old people in our community who can't speak up and protect themselves and who probably don't even identify with our community, who don't actually identify as being part of the gay and lesbian community. They just have their special friend they live with at home.
Corey, in real terms, is it a big problem? Are there a lot of people?
No, it's only about, our estimates say there's somewhere between 2,500 and 3,500 people that we're lobbying on behalf of who fall into the category of being in a relationship and over 55 on a disability support pension or age pension.
If the government could have done something to just protect those people from this particular event, it would be great, but they're not going to.
They didn't originally, and there's a raft of options open to the government that they can do to resolve this issue, and we'll be working through those options with them. One of them is grandfathering to make it permanent, but there's a very big legislative agenda in the Senate at the moment to try and get this in, even if the government wanted to put it in, and then get it through the Senate would be quite time-consuming and may not happen in time.
Okay. So then they can't make it retrospective, really, can they? Because if they reduce the pensions because of the equality and then they bring in grandfathering, they're not going to put the pension back up to what it was.
Just makes it a schmozzle. And look, they go out above the line with some advertising starting 30 March. So we're really talking a number of weeks to get a resolution with the government, not a number of months.
It's not going to happen, is it? Doesn't look very positive. But look, equality comes at a price, as we've discussed, and we have to be willing to give up something. Most of the gay and lesbian people in the community probably won't make that huge a financial difference. I mean, how many of them do get Centrelink money? Not that many.
No, but you know, for the most of the community, this is actually fantastic reform. You know, they're able to have concessional tax breaks with their partner. They're able to put co-contribution, PBS if they're on a number of drugs and working, to be able to hit that safety net and then receive cheaper drugs. It is a fantastic package of reform that doesn't provide a fantastic outcome for a small segment of our community.
Mm. One of my friends is on a disability support pension, and he has a partner who is quite young and comes from a different culture. And
they probably respect the elders there more.
Perhaps. Not necessarily in this culture. But the problem is that the younger partner, his family, are terribly unaccepting of sexuality. And there's this absolute paranoia now that there's going to be some sort of identity, ability to be identity. While the privacy legislation exists, just the fact of having to admit that they're in some sort of relationship sends waves of terror through them. It's something we'll come to deal with, I think, over the years. And, you know, in 5 years' time, Corey, these issues will have gone away. But just immediately, they're...
Do you know what? They have the potentiality not to.
You think?
In 5 years' time, if the government doesn't respond to this properly, the memory of this reform could be the trauma, not the celebration. And
that's really
the biggest concern that I have. That
I hadn't thought of it like that.
All the work that we do will have this bitter taste in our mouth that stays forever, rather than actually celebrating the wonders. Every article I read at the moment is about the negatives, not about the positives.
Yeah.
Our community needs to have the government address these negatives in an appropriate way, and then we need to put that behind us, and we need to start celebrating before they come in on 1 July, because otherwise people are going to just be hit with it.
Okay. Corey, you were heralded as one of the heroes of the community for all of this work that you did. Oh, I listened to you on radio and read articles about how fantastic everything was. And people were just so impressed with you. Since this legislation's happened, what's changed?
I don't think anything's changed. And look, I personally don't see myself as a hero, so thank you for saying that. But I think that I was visible during the campaign and that a lot of people appreciated that there was somebody there talking and explaining it. I think that now there are a lot of people who initially were misinformed and said, you didn't do anything to try and stop this, and you didn't make it happen. And every time I get one of those phone calls or emails and I actually point them to the facts, they come around.
Okay.
So they actually realise that, yes, we did go into the trenches. We did have meetings with ministers. We did have appearances before the Senate inquiry. We did raise this. The Greens did move a 12-month transitionary motion to try and address these things. We did try at every step of the way to A, educate the community about winners and losers, and B, to try and get the Senate to make a recommendation to not do it this way.
Why didn't they?
Why didn't they? There are a lot of speculations as to why didn't they.
Did they give you any reason? Did they feel as though they had to give you any reason? Obviously not.
Of course they did. They did. Their public reason was the fact that equality is equality, and that if they were to continue the discrimination in social security law, it would not be in line with the ALP's policy of removing discrimination. Now, there is a very big difference, in my view, between technical equality, which is what they're talking about, and substantial equality, where you actually take into account a raft of outcomes and things that have occurred to a person throughout their lifetime. You can't just turn a light switch on and say somebody's equal. You can say they're legally equal, that's fine. They're not going to be socially equal, and they're not going to have society accept them overnight. That's a much longer process that I think the ALP, the Greens, the Coalition are starting to wrap their head around, which is why we're talking about a human rights consultation at the moment, how we can protect human rights and how we can bring that to the forefront. We've got a social inclusion minister for the first time. We're heading down that dialogue path, but we're not quite got our head wrapped around it yet, I think, as a society.
Mm. I think we've got a way to go yet. So, After this became evident, people going to lose money, did they start calling your names?
I think the comment, I can't remember it. It was
because they said
bourgeois.
Middle young, class.
Yeah.
Middle class, not going to affect middle class bourgeois people. It's only going to affect the people at the extreme ends, lower end of the community, and all of that. And so, yeah, I can see where it comes from. I get that all the time.
Yeah,
but. It's sad that it's sort of come to this, but there's a huge... this is the whole mindset I'm saying. Look, it's sad that it's come to that. It's not. It's an absolute wonderful celebration of this fantastic event that's happened. But the small things really play on our mind. Like if you meet 100 people in one day and one of them's a bastard, you wouldn't go home and say to your partner, I met 99 lovely people today. You say, I met a bastard today. And it's the same here. All of the great stuff is, yeah, that's good, but there's one thing wrong, and everybody, it's just human nature to focus on the thing that's not so positive.
It is, and this is why I say we need to resolve this issue soon so that we can spend a couple of months celebrating these reforms before they come in.
Yep. What's next?
Sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination laws in the federal arena. What the hell does that mean?
Well, sexual orientation, let's have a conversation about that. Because it used to be sexual preference. And I've gone over and over and over and over to get rid of sexual preference and sexuality, but you like sexual orientation.
We do, and I forgot to bring my little script as the reason why.
Good, so I win.
Look, I'm happy to concede that point at this point, but I still would like to see the word sexual orientation rather than sexuality, because it provides a broader protection than just sexuality. Sexual orientation can be a range of percentages of gay, if you like, etc., bisexuality, etc., whereas sexuality, it's a little narrower.
You think? You see, where you have areas of where actual sexual preference could possibly be appropriate, is you have people who are living...
Sexual orientation and sexual preference are two different things, though.
No, but hang on, let me finish. Don't try and run me off my train of thought at the moment. The sexual preference, people who like to live in the leather lifestyle, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's a sexual preference. It's not a sexual orientation. They choose to live like that. When it comes to gender, though, this is really where it gets very tricky, because gender can be preferential.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a choice about gender. Sexuality, you can't have a choice. So gender orientation doesn't exist, but gender preference does.
Gender identity. So okay. How do you identify your gender? And that covers the broad. And there's probably two things. There's sex identification and gender identification. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, I'll be in Canberra next Tuesday for the report of the Human Rights Commission's Sex Files, which is talking about this issue of how to have documentation for the sex and gender diverse community. And that has going to be a very huge eye-opener to a number of government departments to be able to wrap their head around.
Yes. Oh, I can imagine it would be. The whole thing about gender, I mean, it's a complicated set of issues. It's a very complicated set of issues, and the policies that organisations, governments, and indeed companies need to get their head around is huge. Because for a very simple thing, somebody identifies themselves as female or male, but they don't look like that. So what do you do?
It depends on what the recommendation of the report will be as to what we will say they should do. It is a very complicated thing, and it ranges from very necessary to get it right, because there's financial and legal differences between the male and the female sex, right down to it really doesn't matter, because it's a tick box on a form that goes into a system that's never used to differentiate. Mm. So there's no real reason that somebody shouldn't be able to identify as they do.
It's amazing when you look at New Zealand had a transgendered politician. I mean, how fantastic is that?
And she's such a lovely woman.
Is she?
Mm.
Is she a good politician?
I hear she was a good politician, but Georgina Bayer was out for the rainbow conversations as part of
Outgames
last year and had a number of conversations with her, and just a woman to stand in awe of and respect for just her presence. She's just a few people in the world that I stand, look up to and go, wow, and she's one of them.
Not easily intimidated.
I wasn't intimidated.
No,
she was. She's definitely not easily intimidated.
That's one of the important things. One of the messages that I would like to get through to transgendered people is don't let them intimidate you. Don't let us intimidate you. I mean, I fall into this category sometimes as well, of not being judgmental, but using the visual thing of what they look like as who that is, what their gender is, and it's how they identify themselves is the important issue, not how I identify them.
Small little story. I am my first Fair Day, my first gay big community event when I was about 15. I went to Fair Day, and there was this man in this little leather gladiator's outfit with two nipples pierced and a cap and a dog collar. And these 6-inch stiletto thigh high fuck me boots. It was a gender bender, and I just looked at it and I had to get his number. I just had to get his number. It was just in awe to see this person that was able to blend the perceptions of male female as I had them before then. It was special.
And to this collage of sexuality, it's queer.
It was good.
Yeah. Did you ever ring him up?
Nope. My mission was to get his number, not to use it necessarily.
Corey Earlham, it's been really interesting to talk to you today and find a little bit about the person behind the name. The name's well known. The person's not so well known. I think we've got a little way to understand you today. So tell us, are you happy?
I'm a very happy man.
Are you? How do you know?
Because I've been sad before in my life. Right now, I'm very happy.
Okay, why?
I have a loving partner. I'm not living on the street. I'm not financially destitute. I have a great circle of friends. I have family who love me. I have a volunteer job that I really passionately enjoy and that I'm good at. And I get to speak to wonderful people like you, Adam.
And you have a sense of purpose. That's terribly important to a happy life, is a sense of purpose. I think a lot of people who are unhappy, it's because they have lost perspective of what the sense of purpose is, and you certainly have that. One of the things that impresses me about you from our conversation today is when your sense of purpose becomes realised, you quickly find another one.
There's never going to be, for at least, I think, I'll say the next 10 years, nothing for a gay and lesbian human rights activist not to do.
Good. Corey Earlham, to wind up our conversation today, could you give us a message for the community? Do you have a message for our communities across Australia?
next time you get photographed, I want you to go and buy a white ribbon, and I want you to tie it into two knots, and then I want you to pin it to your lapel and look at that photograph and show it to all your friends. The white ribbon is a symbol started in the USA, symbolizing marriage equality, and I'd like to see Australia adopt it. I'd like to see Australia have equal marriage and recognition of relationships. So I strongly encourage everybody to buy or create a white ribbon and wear it next time they're getting photographed.
Is this leading up to the National Day of Action in August?
I'm not involved. I wouldn't know.
Oh, it sounds like it's a bit of a national campaign happening here to me. I think we've just heard the start of it here on Allegro Non Troppo. Corey Earlham, it's been fantastic to have you in here. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
On behalf of the community, thank you for all the work that you do. We really appreciate it. Even though some of it's not so pleasant at the end of the day, the end game, the outcome, will mean it's a better life for all of us. This has been Allegro Non Troppo across Australia on the Community Radio Network.